Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk about the history of bodybuilding and we talk to the actual bodybuilding legends themselves. And today on the show, we have an interview with Mark Martinez, and Mark has been in the process of putting together a movie about the golden era of bodybuilding, which in this case concerns the late 1970s. And Mark has been working on this movie for a few years now, and he has a background in the film industry. He's from Southern California, and he grew up right around Gold's Gym. And as you'll hear in our interview, he got the idea a couple of years ago of going back in time and recording interviews with some of the greats of the bodybuilding era that were around during the late 70s. And he talked to, in particular, Ken Sprague, who owned Gold's Gym right after Joe Gold sold it. And Ken was responsible also for promoting a lot of really good bodybuilding events, particularly the 1977 AAU Mr. America. And this was held in Southern California. It was won by Dave Johns. But one thing that really set that contest apart was they had an actual parade promoting the Mr. America. So they had elephants, and they had a parade, and it was held in Santa Monica. And a lot of the guys from Gold's Gym were riding the elephants, including Ken Waller, and I believe Tony Pearson was out there, and Dave Dupree, Rudy Hermosillo. So we're going to hear some really, really good stories about that era and about Mark's movie and how he's been working on that. So it's going to be a really, really good interview. We got that coming up in a second. And I want to mention right off the bat that we are sponsored by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. And you may have heard of their award-winning Fat Burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe and the Masters Division in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 and 2018 Classic Physique Olympia champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute, bodybuilding legend Tom Platz, and the real deal himself, Chris Cormier. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you order your supplements at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, so we got the big Arnold Classic coming up this weekend. It'll be taking place on March 2nd and 3rd, I believe, or no, 1st and 2nd, probably. The whole weekend starts on Thursday, which is February 28th, and it goes until Sunday. And unfortunately, I will not be out there again this week because I will be in Colorado Springs, Colorado, for another seminar with the AAI group that I was with last year. And this was actually the first seminar I ever did for them 1 year ago this weekend. And I was out there in Colorado Springs last year, met this beautiful hotel called the Broadmoor. I think I misspoke a couple weeks ago when I called it the Biltmore. It's the Broadmoor Hotel. It's over 100 years old. It's a classic hotel, one of the most beautiful hotels in the whole country. So I'm looking forward to going out there. I think it's going to be a little colder, obviously, than Florida. We have 80-degree weather out here right now, so I think it's going to be in the 40s out there. But that's where I will be this weekend, so next week's podcast either might be early or a little bit late. I'm not really sure. But I'll try and get it up maybe before I leave so you guys have it so it's not too late next week. As far as the Arnold Classic, I'm going to make some predictions right here on who I think is going to win. Looks like a really good lineup. It's going to be a really good show this year, and there's really not anyone in it that is going to dominate, I think, so it's sort of up in the air on who's going to win. My prediction for the win is going to be Brandon Curry. Now, I've been a fan of Brandon Curry's physique for several years now. I used to do, when I used to work for Optum Nutrition years ago, I used to write my Olympia predictions article every year before the Olympia, and I would always put Brandon sort of high, and this is before Brandon really got big. He went over to Kuwait the last few years, and he's really made unbelievable improvements to his physique. But Brandon just got one of those physiques that's very, has incredible shape, a small waist, great muscle shapes throughout his whole physique. So he's always had this great potential, and that's why I always placed him high in my predictions years ago, even though he would never meet those predictions. He would always place lower because he would always come in just a little soft or he just wasn't big enough. Well, now he's really got it together. He did fantastic at the Olympia last year. I thought he should have even placed higher. So I think usually the Arnold is the guy who does well at the Olympia, and then he really comes out at the Arnold. And I think Brandon's going to be the one. So that's my prediction, and sort of a bold prediction. I think not too many people got Brandon picked to win, but I'm picking him to get the first place. And in second place, I think William Bonick's going to get second. William was the winner last year. And he was a little bit off at the Olympia, but he still placed high, and he's always a threat. But unless he really, really hits his peak, I think he's going to get beat this year by Brandon Curry, who's a bigger guy than William Bonick is. In third place, another surprise, I'm picking Josh Leonardowicz from Australia. And Josh is looking unbelievably big. This guy was really good a couple years ago the last time he competed. I think he took last year off. And he is coming back, and I think he's going to shock a lot of people. I think he'll be in the top three. Unfortunately, I got Cedric McMillan in fourth. And I think Cedric was, I can't remember where he took last year. He won it 2 years ago. And 3 years ago, the last time I saw the Arnold Classic, he took second to Kai Green. So unless Cedric really hits his peak, I think he's going to be out of the top three, unfortunately. I hope this guy hits his peak again and wins. I really am a huge fan of Cedric, but I just don't think he's going to be on. And you've got Rowley Winkler in the mix, too. So Rowley could be easily the top three, but he just did a guest posing not too long ago, and he looked a little bit smooth. So I'm thinking Rowley might not make the top five. That's going to be my bold prediction. And I got Luke Sandow in fifth, and Luke is another kind of a new guy, and he's looking really, really good. He's really coming into his own. He's very, very big, so I think Luke might take fifth. If not fifth, I think he'll be top six, and maybe Rowley will be in there anywhere between fourth and fifth. So anyways, that's my predictions. Look for Brandon Curry to take it. That's my bold predictions. I don't know what these guys really look like. I'm just going by the little bit I see on social media and what I think is going to happen. So that's it. Take it for what it's worth. But I will be watching, hopefully, this weekend if I get a chance in between my seminars when I'm out in Colorado, and hopefully get a chance to check out the Arnold Classic as it's going on. We didn't really get a lot of comments on the Robbie Robinson interview, which I was kind of surprised because I was really waiting a long time to get that interview in. I don't know, maybe people didn't really like it or just didn't get a chance to comment on it. The guys over at Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, VJ and Scott, they both liked it. So they made a comment on it last week on the show, so I appreciate those guys listening. And they said it was a good interview. We, of course, did have a little audio problem. I think they didn't have their, when I interviewed Robbie and Rick Valente together, they were doing it at a room at Gold's Gym, and we were doing it by Skype, so I'm not sure if they had a laptop or what they were using, maybe a phone. I don't think they had the volume turned all the way up, because when I asked a question, Robbie couldn't hear me, so Rick sort of had to translate, and as Scott said on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, he thought it went pretty good. He thought it was going to be a disaster, but it actually went okay. So we did have that technical glitch, but I thought it was a pretty good interview, and of course, Robbie is always great to hear from, because he is a real, real legend in the sport, and the guy has just done more than most people will ever dream of in the bodybuilding world, and I hope his health is improving. He is posting now on social media, I've seen this week, but he's still not out of the woods. I think he has to have an operation this week. So I hope he keeps us updated, and everybody's prayers are with Robbie, because we all love him so much because he was such a legend in the sport. So I hope he pulls through. But he's very positive, and he's a real warrior, so I think he'll manage it. I did have some very bad news this week. In the Florida area, we lost a really good guy, a friend of mine. He was the MC for the competitions that I promoted out here in Tampa back in 2014 and 2015. His name was Val Jansky, and Val was just one of those very positive, upbeat guys, and he was a great MC, really gave a whole positive, fun vibe to the whole show, and that's was very important to me as a promoter. I always tried to make my contest really great for the audience as well as the competitors. I really wanted everybody to have a good time. I was always looking at it from somebody who had never been to a bodybuilding show before, and I wanted to show a really classy representative of what bodybuilding was all about. And Val was always great because he always was goofing around, not goofing around in a bad way, but he was just a very positive guy and always had a good time. And I think he made the competitors really feel good, and the audience loved him. My favorite memory of Val was we had a competitor, Dr. Josefina Monasterio, who is a great female bodybuilder. She's in her 70s. She didn't start weight training until she was 59, and she totally transformed her physique. She's totally natural, because the competitions that I was promoting out here in Florida for the NPC were natural contests. It was called the Natural Suncoast. So Dr. Josefina is a real, another very positive, fun person. And when she comes out on stage, she dances around. She doesn't even just stand and do a posing routine. She literally dances and does the salsa dance. And she grabbed Val, who was the nearest person next to her as the MC, and he went out there and just totally hammed it up, sticking his butt out, dancing with her, twirling her around. The audience was just on the floor laughing. So that's what I remember about Val. I mean, that's the kind of person he was. But anyways, he's been suffering from cancer the last few years, and I didn't know how bad it was. You know, I really didn't see him that much because I don't go to a lot of the shows anymore, and I didn't realize it was that bad. And then he stopped posting on Facebook about his disease and that he was going through all this stuff. So I thought he was doing better, and I was absolutely shocked when Ferlin Bailey, who was a local competitor out here, was really good friends with Val. He posted that he passed away last week, and I was just absolutely shocked. He said Val was down to like 110 pounds. He had a tumor in his neck, I believe his head, and it just advanced, and we lost a really, really great guy. I think Val was probably only in his 40s. He was younger than me. So what a shame. What a loss. So best wishes to all of Val's friends and family. And I know he had a girlfriend that he was posting a lot about. So best wishes to her. But what a real loss. Okay, I mentioned we didn't get any emails about the Robbie interview, but we did get other emails. These were mostly from YouTube, from the videos I posted about Ed Corney, about the tribute show we did for Ed after he passed away. And then I put in a couple other separate videos on there where I took parts of that longer video. So this one was from Mike Rothwell, and he was talking about the video called Ed Corney's Greatest Performances, and he says, "How is this guy saying Frank Zane was better than Robbie Robinson that day? I know things look different in person, but from this video, it doesn't even look close." So he's obviously referring to Roger Schwab saying that Frank deserved to win the 77 Mr. Olympia. And I was at that show, and Frank did look great. Robbie, as you can see in the video and in pictures, was obviously much bigger and probably had a better physique, but he just was off that day. He was holding water, and he just didn't make the connection with the audience and the judges that Frank did. So, but I could see how Mike says that from looking at the pictures in the video. Dark Solara made a comment about the Mike Katz Remembers Ed Corney video, and he said, "I had the pleasure of meeting and speaking with Eddie twice. Once was when he competed at the Masters Mr. Olympia, which I was extremely lucky to see that. Then again, when they were doing the 25th anniversary filming for Pumping Iron, Arnold was there, Katz was there, etc. Ed was not just a great bodybuilder, but just an extremely nice person to meet. Damn near hand in hand with Mike Katz. He was also a very nice individual to meet and speak with, who just happens to be champion bodybuilders. The pleasure was all mine. Thank you. Mike Rothwell also made a comment about the Mike Katz Remembers Ed Corny video. He said, this should have way more views, but it will slowly grow for decades. All right, Mike, I hope you're right about that. This one came from Bobby DeMarco, and this was the Ed Corny tribute on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And he said, wow, John, that was terrific. Thanks. Don Sanders made a comment about the Ed Corny's greatest performances. He said, I saw Ed compete in the 1980 Night of the Champions, where he was around eighth place after prejudging. At night, he posed a Sinatra song, New York, New York. He ultimately placed fifth, and the house went berserk while he posed. Greatest routine of all time. Wow, I wish I could have saw that. I never even heard about that one. Ansar Max said, thank you. Ed's posing shadowed his physique. One of the best arms in the sport, but never credited for that. Yeah, Ed did have amazing arms, and he did have a really good overall physique. I really noticed that when I was putting these videos together, how great his physique was, especially for back in the 1970s. Richard Francis wrote me an email, so thank you, Richard. He said, hi, John, I love the show. I purposely do the dreaded cardio session on Tuesdays after each new show hits the podcast. I love the most recent show with Rick Valente and Robbie Robinson. I trained at the Ansonia, Connecticut YMCA back in the late 70s, which was where Rick began his training. He talked about it a little in the first podcast interview you did with him. That was when there was no commercial gyms to be had, but the basement of the Y in that little town was filled with energy way back then and had the best equipment around. You could always tell Rick was destined for greatness. His triceps were off the hook even that far back. He had the total package. But in addition, he had the courage to take the leap to Florida and eventually California. Keep up the great work. You make cardio enjoyable, almost. Richard Francis, and Richard is an assistant principal at Staples High School in Westport, Connecticut. All right, Richard, thank you for listening to the show. I appreciate that email. Roger Roscoe made a comment about the Dorian Yates interview, part one, that was on YouTube. He said, Dorian was great, but a tad too arrogant. He really believes he had a better body in 1991. He has never given Haney his dues, never. And it's clear he still suffers with first fame and believes his own hype. And then Roger also made a comment about the Lee Haney interview, part two, which was our Bodybuilding Legends show number 15. And he said, Haney seems to have really great arms in 1985, and he was really big in 1989. If he really wanted to be competitive in the 90s, he could have. Lee always learned from his competition, as evident from his comments after the 1989 win. All right. Thank you, Roger. And thank you for all of you who emailed me or made some comments on the YouTube channel. All right. Before we get to our interview with Mark Martinez about his movie about bodybuilding, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. And if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you will get a free consultation, and they'll also give you 20% off your order, which is huge. And be sure to ask them about their brand new supplement called the Magic Pill. This is a fat loss and pre-workout supplement, so be sure to ask them about that as well. All right, so that is our opening for the show. Here is our interview with Mark Martinez from California, where we're going to talk about his interviews with some of the greats of the sport and the movie that he's working about the golden era of bodybuilding. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and my guest this week is Mark Martinez, and Mark is in the process of putting together a film about the golden age of bodybuilding, the California spots in the late 1970s, especially the Gold's Gym era. So, Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Well, let's start off, Mark. Let's talk a little bit about your background and then how you got this idea for making this movie. I've been watching, you've been talking about it on Facebook for quite a while and some of the interviews you've had with some of the legends of the sport. So tell us a little bit about your background and what got you involved in wanting to start this.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Southern California.
Okay.
And my freshman year in high school, one of my buddies brings to school the book Pumping Iron. And I went to this Catholic high school in Southern California. So when you got four or five guys circled around the quad looking at something, that's going to cause a ruckus, you know, and it's going to get broken up. But the kid that brought it to school was a guy on our football team, our freshman football team, named Tom Robinson. And he was the guy known as the kid with the muscles. And he was very, very well defined. What was funny is for most of us, and I think maybe a lot of us can relate, the first time you see a photograph of a professional bodybuilder, for a lot of people with no frame of reference whose sports heroes are basically maybe baseball players, football players, basketball players, that this is, for most part, pretty strange. It's not something that was in people's living rooms back then.
Yeah.
So you know, everyone's looking at it and pointing at it. We all have our own little 14-year-old view of the world comments about it. And what I remember about Tom is he was the one kid that could say, oh, no, look at the serratus. And we're like, the what? It was like, look at the quad. He knew the names of all the muscles, it was something that definitely made an impression on me. I think about a year, year and a half later, I bought the book and read it.
Mm-hmm.
And I what I realized, and I told my friend Scott Murphy, who's on, you know, a member of some of the boards that we're on, and I told Scott, I said, it took me probably a couple decades to realize what I really fell in love with that initial infusion of bodybuilding was the prose of Charles Gaines and how cool he made it sound.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he's just a fantastic writer.
Isn't he? I know. I just recently read that book again after Ed Corney passed away a couple weeks ago. Well, it was January 1st. But it's such an enjoyable book to read. He just did such a great job.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, reading it and realizing when he's mentioning, you know, Venice, and I'm like, that was really barely about 15 miles from where we were standing in the quad in our high school.
Wow.
Of course, when you grow up in Southern California in the middle 70s, Venice was known, the term, it was even jokingly referred to on the radio as where the debris meets the sea. And it was a part of Los Angeles County that Los Angeles County really didn't want to have to deal with. It was a place at that point in time, it was like a social experiment had gone wrong. They had built canals, you know, Abbot Kinney had built canals there way back in the turn of the century. He wanted to make it an amusement park, Coney Island type place with Italian architecture.
Mm-hmm.
They discovered, this, I'm giving you some LA history, so forgive me. They discovered oil there, and all of a sudden they're like, you know what? Oil's more important than amusement parks. So it kind of became a place filled with oil derricks. The canals got overrun with sludge, and it became a place. And then after there were some environmental issues, I think as way back in the 30s and 40s, they tried to reclaim it. And so it became a place that was cheap to live. You know, they would put, you know, halfway houses out there. It had always been a place that had attracted bohemians, so to speak. It's always had that reputation, which is funny now. I think you were out for Old School Labs out there, just a couple months ago, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Around Memorial Day.
And it probably blows you away to when you've had your interviews and talking to like Bill Grant and some of the other guys that they can get a two-bedroom apartment on the beach for $180 a month.
Right, unbelievable. And,
yeah, now you know, one bedroom apartment in Venice is running you $4,000 a month.
Yeah, wow.
So it's definitely changed.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's just insane.
Yeah.
But I think for me, obviously in our generation it was Arnold. When I finally became aware of bodybuilding and seeing the pictures of Arnold in Pumping Iron and the pros that Charles Gaines had rode and the Butler photos, and I just thought, wow, and this place isn't too far for me. Mm-hmm. And one of my buddies finally got a chance to go out, but by that time, it had already been turned into Ken Sprague's home.
Oh, okay.
By the time we got out there, late 76, early 77, it had already been enjoying its success from the book. From I think the book was published in 74.
Yeah.
Arnold obviously was getting a lot of mainstream press. Mm-hmm. And then the movie Stay Hungry was released, I think, in late 76. Yeah. And Pumping Iron was slated to be released in 77.
Right.
So Ken had said, no, I had to find a larger space to accommodate growing membership.
Mm.
So by the time we got there, it had already moved to Second Street. So
that's pretty wild. So right after Pumping Iron, the original Gold's Gym was moved to another place.
Well, yeah. And here's one of the things that I found in all these interviews. I've interviewed close to 17 people now, and I think I'm pretty much done unless I get one more interview.
Mm-hmm.
But Ken had said, yeah, that's one of the secrets that no one knows, is that Gold's Gym had already been turned into Ken's home, and it had already been moved to Santa Monica before Pumping Iron had been released, because it was released, I believe, it was in 77, but was it? It was February of 77.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gold's on Second had already been opened up, and so that's one of those little so many things that I found out about the history of it.
So when did you start doing interviews for this movie, Mark?
I started in 20. I can't believe it, John. It was late 2015.
Wow.
And and I have to say, I think with the internet, for me, but because I had spent time at Gold's between 77 and 80, and then I was a member of both the original World Gym and Gold's for 1980.
Okay.
And then I stayed at World Gym until about 85. But again, with the internet, this was like probably early 2000s, I'm online. And I found that Mike Menzer had died, which blew me away. I left that world behind so long ago.
Yeah.
That it kind of made me want to. Oh, there's this. I can look up things, and that's when I found just the people enamored of that era and those gyms.
Mm-hmm.
And my initial plan was I thought I was going to do a short documentary on Mike. Because he was a major figure at the Second Street Gym, and a star that burned brightly and probably should have burned longer.
Yeah.
But I kind of put that on hold because I'm like, how do I make that for a wider audience? You know, it just didn't seem feasible.
Right.
I get back into my career. I work at a television station in the Bay Area. I've been working in TV since about 1987.
Okay.
So I do camera, I do lighting, I do editing. And I think it was about 2014 or so, and I saw one of your it was a Bill Grant interview.
Yeah.
You did. And actually I have to thank you for the spark.
Oh, okay.
That kind of pulled into focus, because I knew that I wanted to do something on an era, and I was like, well, what do I focus on? What do I focus on? Who do I focus on?
Mm-hmm.
And you were interviewing Bill, and Bill was talking about his apartment. He had an apartment off of 7th and Wilshire.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you would leave Gold's Gym, you'd go north on 2nd Street, you would make a ride on Wilshire, you'd go down five blocks, and Bill's place was there, and he lived with he had two roommates, and one was Larry Gordon, and he was trying to remember Larry Gordon's name, and I don't think you knew, and I'm at home watching your, and I'm going, it's Larry Gordon, it's Larry Gordon, because Larry, and a lot of people mistook him for Mike Menzer. He looked a lot like Mike,
yeah,
and I don't know if you, yeah, he was a great competitor, very thick, muscular guy, and I thought, well, wait, you know, when I thought, I'm like, wait a minute, I was there, you know, I knew Bill was one of the first big-time professional bodybuilders that I had met in person, which, as you know from your earliest memories, the first time you see, like, a top-level world-class bodybuilder in person, it's like getting kicked in the chest by a horse.
Right,
just such a shock, you know? And one thing, you know, so I thought, okay, you know what? I was a member there, and my impetus to get there, you know, sometimes you see people that inspire you.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, because you obviously have, well, there's the top, you know, there's the top guy in the world who is Arnold or Franco. But, you know, who's kind of my age or who's kind of got.
Yeah, who can you relate
something
to?
Exactly. So, you know, I'm sitting there and I open up a muscle builder that my friend had, and there's a picture of Rudy Hermosillo. And I go, Rudy looks like he could be in my family. You know, he looks like a cousin.
Right.
And I'm reading it. And in fact, Mike Mentzer wrote that little article. I think Rudy had just won. He'd won the Teenage Mr. Cal and had just won the Teen USA in 77.
Okay.
And I'm just like, wow, this guy's 18, going to be 19. And, you know, I'm looking at the side chest photo. And I'm just like, wow, this is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see that name again, Gold's Gym, you know, and that's when we decided to drive out there. So the very first time I did drive to Gold's with my buddy, we walk in, and who's working out but Rudy?
Wow.
Yeah. And I walk in, and when you walk in on that Second Street Gym, you have the two large plate glass windows that you can look through that said Gold's Gym on either side. And then to the right of it, they would have a dumbbell rack along the wall with mirrors. And Rudy was over there, and he was doing side laterals with like 55-pound dumbbells. And he had a tank top on, like a Gold's Gym tank top. And his shoulders would just look like a bunch of bananas. He's like about 5'6", and he looks like he's going about 195, which is back then in those days was a lot of weight on a 5'6" frame.
And he was still a teenager too, right?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, yeah. Rudy's two years older than I am, and also there that first day, you know, Kent Keene's at the front desk, Pete Sammer's at the front desk, Larry Gordon is there, Bill Grant. I'm trying to think who else. Tony Pearson.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, and everyone says it, you know, the magazine came to life. It literally just came to life. And so
this
I'm
was
just 77, like, wow.
Mark?
Yeah.
77, and, okay.
Yeah. And I could see that Rudy's, who I found out later was a stepdad, a gentleman named Dino, he could see that my friend and I are looking, because our jaws probably. It was funny because my friend at the time, he was getting recruited to play football for University of Washington. And he was a tall guy, you know, and he was a kid that could bench like 300 pounds as a freshman. And he was a pretty strong, big guy.
Right.
And he would like look through the magazines like, these guys were all worms. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
So it was kind of great to see his reaction because he was like speechless. And I just kind of looked down like some worm, huh? And what was nice was that Rudy's stepdad, Dino, could see our interest. And so he called us over and said, you know what, he's done if you want to talk to him. I got very, very lucky my first day because I never really had to pay my dues in that sense that because Rudy and Dino were very well liked, Rudy was almost like I wouldn't quite say a mascot, but he was definitely a very magnetic personality. Very handsome kid,
mm-hmm.
and people gravitated around him. And I think because he was so young and there was that innocence.
Yeah.
They were good friends with Ken Sprague, who was the owner,
mm-hmm.
and good friends with the manager. So all of a sudden, through my association with Dino and Rudy, I immediately got to know most, if not all, of the guys right off the bat.
Yeah.
You know, so I was just like, wow, it was quite a thrill.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, tell me some more stories about some of the, because you said you worked out at Gold's, right, for a few years from like 78 through 80 or something, right?
Yeah. You know, Dino had said he'll stop by and we'll write out the program with the vitamin.
Uh huh.
supplement regimen, you know, the protein powders and meals, and, you know, the typical stuff, you know, right. Eat a couple, you know, three meals a day, drink a couple protein drinks between your meals. And he put me on, they had me on a, the push-pull split.
Okay.
2 days on, 1 day off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, legs, chest, tricep one day, back, shoulder, bicep the next.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, and I remember they were writing it out, and Rudy says, this is what Menster uses, you know, and I said, oh, okay, works for him, and they go, but, you know, you don't want to do that many sets, and I think they started me like 10 to 15 sets of body part, and then like after a few months, you know, obviously everyone's going to grow because it's just the beginning. And then it kind of plateaued, and they go, you know what, maybe you're doing too much, because I'm an ectomorph.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, 5'10 and a half my best day, but I definitely have, you know, smaller wrists and ankles.
Right.
I seem to make my best gains look like 6 to 10 sets of body part, and keep it basic.
Relative, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was nice because there was a guy that was he had placed close to Bob Jankowicz a couple of times. His name was Jimmy Flaherty, and him and Larry Jackson. Oh, Larry kind of trained very quietly and alone,
mm-hmm.
But Jimmy was a very boisterous guy and was friends with Rudy, and he would always include me. So I was very lucky to have a guy who, you know, Jimmy. Did very well in the junior LA and the LA as well as junior Mr. Cal. And I was kind of fortunate, to have those guys and to be able to see, depending on what my school schedule was, go in and see, you know, who was there.
Yeah.
And in summertime around contest time, it was like the magazine because everyone would come out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And just amazing, you know.
So who did you see? Did you see Robbie and Menser? Like they were around at that time, right? That was their
head. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Robbie, the first time I saw Robbie, and it was early morning, and he was training with a guy named Denny Malloy at the time.
I remember him.
And, yeah, Denny was a very tall guy, got about 6'1", 6'2", but Robbie was just, you know, unbelievable. Yeah. Just unbelievable. You know, it looked like he had a 27-inch waist.
Mm-hmm.
When he would move, every single fiber in his body would just spring to life.
Wow.
And perfect shape.
Yeah.
Very, very intense and very, very quiet. And for me, you know, being like 17, I was kind of like intimidated. Like, I'm not gonna, you know, it's like I could talk to Bill because Bill always had a smile.
Yeah.
Bill would include, you know, I mean, one time Jimmy and I are like, I don't know, working arms and I'm doing preacher curls or something. And I hear a voice, come on, one more, two more, two more. And there's a little finger under the bar. And when I open my eyes, it's Bill Grant.
Wow.
You know, and I told Bill when I interviewed him and I spoke to Bill about a month ago on the phone. But I said, you know, Bill, I go, you know, your secret to life is you love people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Bill loves to train. I mean, he just, you know, there are some guys, as you know, that they go in there and they, you know, it's almost like they have to do it.
Yeah.
And to Bill, it's like 5 a.m. squats, woohoo, you know.
Yeah.
He's just that guy. And
yeah.
Not that Robbie loves to train, but Robbie would just, you know, he would just go in the zone. But I loved watching him train because it would be moderately heavy weight for very high rep, which is something I'd never seen before.
Hmm.
You know,
was he wearing his torn up t-shirts, Mark, where he tied them up and stuff?
Oh yeah, it looked so freaky. You know, he had the kind of like the track shorts with those unbelievable hamstrings, and he'd have like the torn up tank tops.
Yeah,
and then you know, the beanie.
Yeah.
You know, the beanie on his head.
Right.
And I you could rarely, you would, Robbie wouldn't even utter a peep. You know, he was just, you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, just so in the zone, you know, watching those guys train. And then in the summer, my God, you know, I remember Richard Baldwin, you know, Dave Johns.
Yeah.
Manny.
What'd you think of Dave Johns in person?
Dave was fantastic, and he was one of those physiques, and he was a very, very nice man. Mm-hmm. And I think one because he worked with troubled youth, and he was a corrections officer.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. So he was always a guy that, he was just very, very friendly and helpful and very strong. Very, very strong. And him and Danny Padilla, I think, kind of trained very, very similar. Like, they'd obviously had handled heavier weight in their past to get their size.
Yeah.
And then once they got what they felt was their size, then they would, I don't think it was nothing for Dave to rep out with 455 for squats, for his working sets. And it looked like he could handle more.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really followed professional bodybuilding since probably the middle 80s. But I would imagine, guys back then, they're like, look, I'm not gonna add more size just for the sake of size. I want to make sure everything makes sense.
Yeah, it looks good.
And John's, when you looked at his physique, he's very, very balanced, mm-hmm. Tremendous, really, really no weaknesses.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Right. He didn't. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a guy who, he's been dead quite a few years now, but I remember, when he was around, I was always impressed with his physique because he had a really good size for that era. And like you said, he was really balanced, real thick,
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, but just wanted to, circle back around and say, when you had interviewed Bill, that really kind of lit the spark to say, okay, I'm going to make the focus of this doc, that era.
Yeah.
And it's kind of grown because I thought, well, I'll focus on my time at goals between 77 and 80.
Yeah.
Then they moved it. When Grimkowski and Kimber and Connors bought it from Ken, they eventually found a larger building. Because, again, it was kind of a victim of its own success.
Mm-hmm.
It needed a larger place for more members.
What year was that, Mark, when they moved it again?
I think they finally moved it in 81.
Okay.
I believe, and it's funny as well. It's one question I was actually culling through my Pete Gronkowski interview last night, which is about 2 hours long,
mm-hmm.
and because I'm trying to find out. I believe he does say, because there was one point there where the old Gold's on 2nd Street was still open, but there wasn't much equipment in it because most of it had already been moved over to the Hampton location.
Oh, okay.
Where it is now. I think 81 was the official cut the cord where 2nd Street's doors were finally closed.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about Danny Padilla? Did you get to see him?
I did. And Danny's and a guy I tried to get for the interview and. Hold on a sec, John. I'm gonna plug in a charger and talk to you.
All right.
Hold on.
That's okay. I can edit it. I can edit any of this out, Mark, so that's fine.
Oh, okay. My power's running low here.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so now... Oops. Okay, do you have me now, John?
Yeah, I still got you.
Okay, good. Okay, so Danny was a fantastic, fantastic guy. He, he was really good friends with Rudy and Dina.
Yeah.
And, when Danny had come out, I believe it was for some contest in 78, and, Rudy and Dino had moved, and they were living closer to the gym, and I was to stop by. I would stop by and see if Rudy needed a ride to the gym or if I needed to take something into the gym or
mm-hmm.
whatever. And I go into their place, and I see sitting on the couch Danny Padilla, and I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
Danny, whip smart sense of humor,
yeah.
and... very, very, very funny guy, very smart guy, very funny guy. And if he was 5'9", he probably would have been Mr. Olympia at least three times.
For sure, yeah.
You know, I mean, just a great guy. I just felt fortunate, that I got to meet them. I mean, when I was making the rounds, and I told Sprague a few years ago when I was trying to have him vet for me, like, hey, you know, this is my project. I'm going to send him emails, but if you could too, it would really, really help. Because they don't remember a 17 or 18 year old
kid.
Sure. It didn't work with Danny, I wish, because, you know, the guy has so much to add. You know, this guy's got, you know, so many great stories.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you get to see...
One of my favorites.
Yeah, me too. Did you get to see Mike Mentzer train during that era?
Yes. Yeah, Mike was a mainstay, as you know, in 77 and 78.
Yeah, that was his peak, yeah.
Yeah, Joe was already putting in the magazine that he was already basically the next... And Mike, I would see Mike there at the gym with his girlfriend, Kathy,
mm-hmm.
and also Kathy was friends with Stacy Bentley.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, who was John Balick's girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
And I would see them there. And in fact, one time, you know, Mike was so many things have been said about him.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, I go, I remember the happy world on a string, Mike, and maybe that's from my interactions with him in the gym. You know, one time showing me how the Nautilus pullover worked.
Mm, okay.
You know, and you know, because it was the old plate loaded one, and I think that was actually Franco's machine.
Oh, really?
That Arthur Jones had given him, and it had become Gold's equipment, and somehow it just always made the trip whenever Gold's moved. It's actually Franco's machine. He never got it back. but Mike would use it, and he'd have that thing loaded up with 50 and 100-pound plates.
Wow.
You know, and, yeah, I had never seen anyone do reps so slow on that thing, you know, and just pouring sweat. And you're like, oh, this guy trains a little differently. I mean, he did more sets than he said he did, but in terms of his rep performance and his concentration, again, just an amazing guy. I mean, one of my favorite memories would just be to see him zipping through Santa Monica. He had a brand new T-top 260Z, which when those were all the rage, and it was black. And I was turning off Main Street onto Pico, and I hear Communication Breakdown by Led Zeppelin, like, really loud next to me. And I turn next to me, and it's like this guy in the T-top. And I go, oh, it's Mike, you know? And so those are some of the memories that I remember, you know, as a kid.
Right.
Well, you know, these guys you read about the magazines. You know, I mean, yeah, he was definitely one of my faves there for a while.
Yeah. Did you get to see Tom Platt's train?
Yes, yes. Wow. Tom was I saw Tom train there, and I saw Tom train a lot more at World Gym in the 80s.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, you know, seeing Tom in the late 70s, you know, I thought he had a great physique. You know, he was very, very, very balanced. I mean, I'm sure he'd be the first to tell you, oh, he probably needed to bring up his arms a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But Tom was, you know, another guy that loved to train.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, always with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a good sense of humor. I think people would be surprised at some of the humor some of these guys have and some of the personalities they have.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah,
that's a guy I wish I could have seen train at his peak, you know, those legendary leg workouts and, you know, just the intensity that he brought. And Mentzer also, I would have loved to have seen him train at his peak, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, Tom, at World Gym, there was a photo, I think Terry Strand, your friend, had posted something, and it was a photo. I knew it was taken at World Gym and back in the corner, and I noticed two of the guys spotting Tom. One of the guys was a guy I worked out with. His name was Gary Cacucci, and Gary was actually a pretty good AAU and NPC competitor in the late 70s into the early 80s.
Okay.
And the other guy was a guy named Mike Jungles, and they would spot Tom. And, you know, yeah, I mean, you would just hear the plates rattle as he would just go up and down, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he'd wrap up those knees and just go to town. Yeah. Even other pros looked at it. It was mm-hmm. so freakish.
Yeah. Know? How about Samir Banut? Did you get to see him?
Yeah, you know, pretty much all the, you know, a lot of the guys, mm-hmm. pretty much all the guys, and I think that's why I was probably so distracted from being anything more than a hack novice-level competitor that right. I was.
You're so distracted, yeah.
Samir, one of the funniest things I remember, it was at World Gym, and if you walked up the steps from Main Street, up into the gym and kind of made like a U-turn, there was an incline bench facing a mirror, and then next to that was like Joe Gold had built a seated behind the neck press type of bench. And Samir sitting on it, and Joe Weider was in. So I know this had to be early 80s because the photo moratorium on World Gym had been lifted. And tourists would be popping in all the time, and kids would come in with their cameras, and, well, not necessarily kids, but this one guy comes up, and he looks at Samir. Samir's on the incline bench, and Joe Weider's next to him. They were talking, but Samir was clearly in between sets, and the kid walks up, and he looks at him and goes, "Hey, you look pretty good. Who are you?" And Samir just smiled that great smile, and he looked at Joe and goes, "See, Joe, I told you I need more publicity." You know? And I just thought, you know, it was, you know, back then, I think, you know, John Balick said it perfectly when I interviewed John. And John had said that it was good for the country when Golds started licensing. You know, both Ken Sprague and John Balick said, "We're happy for the guys like Tim and Ed and Pete that make a lot of money from mm-hmm. basically spreading the goals they go." But in a way, it kind of killed the centralization of bodybuilding, only in terms of atmosphere, because but it's a good thing. There was now a lot more well-equipped gyms around the country. So you didn't have to travel out unless you chose to.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, wherever a movement is, whatever it is, you lose that kind of special central locality to it, you know?
Right. I agree with that. Yeah, for sure. It was a special place for a limited amount of time until, you know, everybody started catching on and it was all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think back to Arnold's era, you know, back in the 70s, or when they filmed Pumping Iron even, everybody would come out to Gold's that summer. You know, all the champs would just go there to that small Gold's, the first Gold's gym, and they would all train there. So you had all these guys just in that one little gym for that whole summer. So that had to be amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
So tell me about some of the guys you interviewed, Mark. I know you said you've done 17 different interviews, right? 17 different people?
Yeah, the first interviews I did, and it was because Wayne Galish was coming over from Australia to the Olympia.
Okay.
And fortunately for me, my sister lives in Las Vegas, so I figured I'll fly out, see my nieces and nephews, and then I interviewed Wayne. And then also I interviewed Pete Samra. Pete came up from Arizona and met us there.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete, because he was the manager of Gold's Gym on Second Street, he was a major figure for me. You know, it's the front desk at Gold's was kind of like mm-hmm. you know, like the switchboard central,
right,
you know,
right.
And so much social activity would go through there. Yeah,
right.
And then also because Tony Pearson lives in Las Vegas.
Okay.
I interviewed Tony. So that first weekend, I flew out to Vegas, interviewed Wayne, Pete, and Tony. And then about a month later, I had a gentleman who's my life coach and is helping me with financing.
Okay.
he flew out. We rented a studio, and he flew out for me. Ken Sprague, who's living in Atlanta right now, in a suburb of Atlanta, Ken Waller, Rudy Hermosillo, who's in Florida,
okay.
Bill Grant, who's back east in New Jersey or Finland, depending on the time of year,
yeah,
and then Dave Dupree.
Wow.
And, the funny thing with Dave is, I think, you know, I've probably said it on the boards many times. I was looking around for Dave forever, and he was right in my backyard. He was living in San Francisco, and he was he would walk around Lake Merritt in Oakland with like a 20-30 pound weight vest, and you know, it's like, I think Dave's 80 now, and he's still in great shape.
Wow, really?
So
I didn't know Dave was still alive. I haven't heard about him in years.
Yeah, he's very, you know, he's very, you know, Dave, I'm not going to say who gave me the contacts, mm-hmm. because he's like, don't say you got it for me. He says only because Dave is such a private man.
Yeah.
And Dave is like, I cold called him, like, okay, this is, it's going to go two ways, either good or bad.
Yeah, he's going to hang up on you, or he'll do it.
Yeah, I let him know, you know, who else I had on board. And he says, "Okay, I'll meet you. Meet me here." And so, met in a restaurant and spoke. And then when I got his trust, then we set up a date, and it was great because he got to see Waller and Sprague and
oh wow,
and Rudy and Bill, and they got to talk about old times.
Yeah,
you know.
So flew all these guys out at once, Mark?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Dave, I didn't have to, but those four flew in.
Okay.
And then, fortunately, everybody else has been in California. So, for me, that's been a lot of driving because I live up in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So, either driving or flying, I'll go down to Southern California and set up interviews. And I interviewed Rick Drayson, a man named William Lomas, who... The reason I interviewed William is he's the gentleman who owned the company that produced the 1977 Mr. America Day Parade.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the floats, yeah. And he says, "Yeah, I'm still alive and kicking." And he had some pretty funny stories. I'm glad I was able to get a hold of him.
Yeah.
And again, I interviewed this past August Franco Colombo.
Oh, really? Great.
Yeah. And that was a pleasure, you know. Just a warm, you know. He was just so nice. I mean, he was. We taped it in his chiropractic studio, and so you know, it was kind of an imposition. I mean, yeah. It was done on a weekend, you know, so he had no clients there. But still, it was very nice.
Yeah,
because he knew I'm like, you know, fighting with financing. You know, it's like I just can't like you know rent a studio.
Yeah,
You know. Yeah, for every interview. And then actually I flew to Alabama and interviewed Charles Gaines, which, again, thank you for that, because the information I had from Charles, I was going through his artist representation through his his publishers, and didn't get a response. But the address that you gave me, I sent him some clips of some other interviews just to let him know who else I had on board.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I spoke with Charles and stayed at his place in Alabama for 3 days.
Wow, nice. Very nice.
Yeah, he has a nice little gym. And there's some great pictures on the wall of Arnold fishing with two of his kids when they were younger. They're now adults, but it was around Stay Hungry time. So this is 75. I would imagine, hadn't been before.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite interviews when I interviewed Charles Gaines, just because he was so well spoken and you know very articulate and really nice guy. But he had some fantastic stories, of course, because he was there during the seminal point of bodybuilding. You know,
people say, "Oh, this guy's a man's man," and Charles is a man's man. You know, he had a beautiful compound. Basically, there were four homes on 88 acres and a lake.
Wow!
It was like your own little world. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, you know, we were walking around his property, walking his dogs, and you know, the guy's leaving me in the dust. I'm like sitting there, like, you know, sucking wind, and he's just walking around. And, yeah. I've interviewed, a couple weekends ago, I was finally able to get Pete Grimkowski.
Okay.
And Manny Perry. And, let me see who else. Well, John Balick.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think who else. It's quite an extensive list.
How was Ken Waller? I always wanted to talk to him too, because he was around during those great years too.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, I have a friend, Gary, who, he won a gold medal in the Goodwill Games in powerlifting. And Gary was there, when I was, interviewing, the five guys at the studio up here, near my house. And, I would interview them one at a time back in the studio. And Gary was up in the, kind of like the front of the studio area with, you know, the bottled waters. And he goes, I'd be talking to the other four guys. And he says, you should have had a GoPro mounted out there. He said, because there's a lot of good stories that'll never be recorded.
Get those guys all together. I'm sure you had some great stories.
Yeah, because they, you know, what's great was they jogged their memories. And Ken was a great guy. And again, like Dave Dupree, you know, said, you know, Waller is a man's man, and Ken is a guy that strikes me as exceedingly fair,
mm-hmm.
And honest as the day is long, mm-hmm. and just, you know, when they say old school, he's old school. But, you know, loves cars still. He says he still, you know, will go in search of cars,
mm-hmm.
Buy them, fix them up, resell them.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Still does it. And I got an email from him a couple days ago, and he has a home in Florida.
Really?
That he says he's listing, and he's going to move to Gulf Shores in Alabama.
Okay.
And he said, yeah, because people ask me, he goes, because this is my, I think he said my fifth home in the last 9 years or something like that. And he says, I moved because I can. And he's still, you know, vibrant. I mean, he still looks big and strong. You know, when I saw him in person 2 years ago, you know, I mean, he still looked 6 foot to me. And funny thing was, the day I went to pick those guys up for an interview, I put them all up in this hotel, and I pick them up, and Bill Grant comes out the front of the hotel laughing, and he says, we're eating breakfast this morning, because Ken Waller almost got into a fight, and I'm like, what, you know, and Ken said, yeah, because there was this young couple there in the hotel restaurant as everybody's eating breakfast, and I'm sure in big cities, and definitely here in the Bay Area, it's like, you know, if you have to use your cell phone, go outside. Don't, you know, ruin the experience for everybody in the restaurant. Go outside and talk. And evidently, I guess the woman wasn't, and Ken had told the boyfriend, would you mind if she went outside and was pointing to the sign that said so? And Ken says, the guy looked at me and says, sit down, old man. And Bill goes, that's when Ken turned red, stood up, his chair went flying, he goes, and the guy jumped back. He goes, the guy was like in his middle 30s, but Ken said, I didn't care. He goes, I was going to mop the floor with the guy. And he goes, it took me and Dave Dupree to like stop him because he was going to charge the guy.
And
I guess the other couple just got up and left, but Ken still got it.
Yeah, he still got it. How old is Ken now? He's got to be close to 80, right?
Yeah, I think he's...
He was older than Arnold.
I want to say 74.
Yeah,
but you might be right. Yeah, I'm not. I know. Bill just turned 72. I think Waller's 74. I'm just
okay. All right.
You know, I got to tell you. You know, when and even when I interviewed Grimkowski 2 weekends ago, 3 weekends ago, all these guys, you know, clear eyes and great skin tone. You know, I mean, all of them. You know, there wasn't one guy that was hunched over or hating life or looked bad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Rudy actually probably didn't ambulate the best. But only because he got in a really, really bad auto accident.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And this was, I guess, more than a decade ago or so. Mm. But he says, yeah, because it really, kind of, he's got like pins in his hip.
Oh, wow. Hmm.
Yeah, but he's okay, but obviously that limits what I can do in the gym these days.
Yeah, yeah. How was Ken Sprague to talk to? Because I'm sure he had some great stories. He owned the second Gold's Gym, like you said.
Yeah, yeah. Ken's a great guy. And his wife, Donna, her brother lives up here in the Bay Area. So they've come out once or twice just to visit her brother, and we'll meet up. And Ken, I think Ken, like Charles Gaines and John Bailick, had some of the best interviews because they were there during the era, and while they were immersed in it, they weren't necessarily bodybuilders, so they had a much better perspective, overview of social and current change. And, one thing Gaines had said, when he was talking about how hard it was for him to get that book published, Pumping Iron.
Sure.
All the things he had to do behind the scenes. But then he said after that, he goes, there's certain things that happen. And he goes, it was like dominoes falling and everything kind of lined up.
Yeah.
And Sprague kind of said the same thing too. He says, I bought Gold's Gym on a lark. He said that, well, I think what a lot of people would be surprised to know, because Gold's is still a large brand. It's well known.
Yeah.
Is that it never really made any money when Joe Gold owned it.
Mm-hmm.
And like John Bailey said, Joe Gold wanted to sell it to me. He goes, I didn't know how I was going to make money if I bought it.
Hmm.
And Joe eventually sold it. Like Ken said, and John Bailey said, Joe never made money with it. He was pretty much tired of owning it and sold it in 1970 to a pair of guys. One was named Dave Sachs, who's a really good friend of John Bailey, and a gentleman named Bud Dance.
Hmm.
And they owned it.
And that was in 1970, Mark?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
I didn't realize he sold it that early.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Joe turned it over early. And those two guys, Sprague said, Bud Danitz was an antique dealer.
Yeah.
And he was kind of the money man. And they tried to kind of modernize the gym. Let's see what we could do with it. But the time wasn't right. The area wasn't right. And Ken says, he goes, I think I was working out in the gym one day. And Dave Sachs and Bud Danitz asked me, do you want to buy it? He said they had 40 or 50 paying members, and this is late 71, early 72, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And they're like, they go, either someone buys it or we turn it into an antique shop because we're losing our shirts here. So Ken says, if I don't shrug my shoulders and say, okay, he goes, I turned to Walter and said, I really don't want to own a gym, but if you run it and manage it, I'll buy it.
Hmm.
And Waller said, sure, why not? So Ken said, I found out what he had to purchase. He had to assume, he had to come up with something down. I don't know what it was down. I know it's in the interview. And then he assumed the liabilities on the mortgages, which included the Gold's Gym building. And then a lot, there was a house on one side and a lot on the other side of the gym. So basically, Danitz and Sachs had the foresight to have three lots, the gym and one on either side, and Ken bought those as well. So Ken all of a sudden owned those. Mm. And so that was, from it become 1 month from becoming an antique shop in 1972 to Ken using his media connections and, marketing savvy to it being probably the most famous gym in the world by 1979.
Yeah. Wow, can you imagine if he wouldn't have bought it and they would turn it to an antique store? There would have been no Pumping Iron movie,
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, everything is just, it's that twist of fate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what Gaines had said too. You know, he goes, there were so many things. He says, because obviously, he goes, once we wrote the book, and we were gonna do the movie when yeah. George Butler movie, and obviously Arnold had become a lot more well known from the release of the book to about the time they were gonna film the movie.
Yeah.
He goes, we need to focus at Gold's because that's where Arnold trained.
Yeah.
He said, but we'll writing the book and going around to different gyms. You know, he was mentioning Pearl's gym and Vince's gym, which were, at the time, in the early 70s, probably more famous gyms than Gold was in Southern California.
Right.
But they just weren't felt, because we really weren't welcomed there, so to speak. You know, Vince kind of crosses an intrusion.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and he goes, and that's what made the movie a success, was that Ken would, you know, Ken, the look of the gym changed because what Ken had to do was paint over the front windows of the gym.
Okay.
Because to cut the backlight coming in.
Oh, okay.
For the film cameras.
Okay.
So, and then Ken said they put up a lighting grid overhead so that the lights were always there. And then they would close the gym if they needed to and move people in to stage certain scenes.
Okay.
And he says, he goes, you know, because, you know, Ken knew about film, and he goes, he made it easy for us.
Hmm.
He goes, again, you know, it's one more thing that it just didn't happen, you know. They just didn't, like, walk in and turn yeah. the camera.
Yeah, yeah.
Things, yeah.
So Ken Sprague had a background in film?
Well, Ken he's, you know, I had his story in there. He had a production company where he said, because they did everything from, he was, one day we would be shooting, you know, some low budget porn film, and the next day it would be like a preacher on TV on the same stage. He goes, we had some commercial shot there.
Yeah.
Evidently having people, knowing people in the industry, he said, my Sunday breakfast for a while were with Catherine Hepburn and my wife at the time, because they just, he goes, coming to California, you know, he kind of lucked out.
Yeah.
And he's a very bright guy, he's a very charming guy, a very smart guy.
Yeah.
And all that worked, you know, to his advantage in building the brand.
Yeah, I'm glad also you got to talk to him and all the other guys about that parade that they staged with the 1977 AAU Mr. America, because that was amazing, especially when you look back at it today. I mean, how many times has there been a huge parade in honor of the Mr. America contest? So the way he staged that was just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was one of those events that, yeah, it's just amazing. And he had said that he wasn't interested really in making money, that it was more of a promotional piece.
Yeah.
He wanted to make sure that he had the bid locked in for the America. He got the Santa Monica Civic.
Mm-hmm.
But he thought, you know what, let's do something really big. And he actually, too, said from the momentum of that, and NBC Network had wanted to pay the AAU physique committee.
Really?
Yeah, I think Ken said he was after that, like, I think it was $125,000 for the rights to televise Mr. America every year, but it would have to be done in Los Angeles.
Mm.
And that this is a good opportunity, we need to take it. And some of the AAU guys said, well, no, tradition is it travels around the country.
Yeah.
And and you understand that, okay, you want to build up, you know, the regional participation.
Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, in the long run, you thought, wow, what would have happened if he had that?
Yeah,
publicity. Your event.
You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Miss America came, what, Atlantic City every year, does it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Hmm. Hey, did Ken ever explain what the train drawings were on Gold's Gym on the walls? I always wondered about that.
Well, I think he said those were added by Sachs and Danitz.
Oh, okay.
And that part of the quote-unquote modernization of the gym. Because if you see in I think there's a photo of Pumping Iron of Denny Gable in the locker room, and there's like that kind of like early 70s stylized female face.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, because it's like if you knew Joel Gold, you know, the only thing that was on the wall was, you know, plain beige or white, and then maybe like a well-painted sign that says, don't drop weights, replace your weight.
Right.
And that was, right. You know, yeah, those were two things that Danitz and Saxon put up to quote-unquote modernize the gym. But wow. I thought it was so cool, those railroad car schematics.
Yeah, I did too. Know, it's so unusual, you know.
Yeah, you never see that.
No. So, Mark, when is the movie coming out? I mean, are you said you're pretty much done with your interviews and stuff, and how are you going to release it?
Yeah, you know, it's my producer, Mike Murphy, is like, damn it, I didn't think you were going to take 3.5 to get this done. I said, I know, Mike, neither did I.
Yeah.
I'm saying 2019's a year, and now what I'm doing is integrating the last two interviews I have, about an hour of Manny, 2 hours of Pete, that has to be culled down with all the other interviews. And I'm also going to be securing rights for all of the B-roll that I need. You know, mm-hmm. You know, when you're looking at a documentary and it cuts to a shot of a certain location or certain stock footage, that costs money. I mean, yeah, the photos that I need from George Butler alone are going to run close to $20,000. So
wow, okay,
that's really you know, the biggest holdup.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see how that goes. I have to present the bottom line to my producer, and then we'll see if the wish list flies. And if not, then I'm going to have to start knocking stuff off. But I'm hoping to get this done by late 2019.
Okay.
It's either that or it becomes a never-ending project. I mean, I think when I was interviewing John Balick, and which was, you know, one of my favorite interviews, and he had mentioned being in Arnold's apartment when Gaines and Butler walked in to pitch Pump Iron to Arnold, the book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my first thought was going to be, oh, damn it, now I'm going to have to try and track down Charles Gaines. And you start to see how something that in my head was going to be a project that covered, you know, Golds from 77 to 80 and the Mr. America Parade and my time at that gym has now grown to, seems to be about three times that size now.
Yeah, it just kept evolving.
Yeah. But, you know, you don't want to cut things off. You want to be able to, and then you find stuff out. You find great history out.
Yeah.
The gym office being closed.
Mm-hmm.
The chain of ownership, and then the way, and even Pete Gronkowski, when he said, the way I kind of came upon the gym was kind of the way Ken did. You know, Ken's wife at the time, Marion, had she got throat cancer, and she passed away really soon. And it was just, you know, for Ken, you know, Gold was scaling new heights. It was, you know, he'd written the Gold's Gym weight training book. I mean, you couldn't turn on a TV in the local LA area without someone from Gold's being on one of the morning shows.
Yeah.
It was always out there. And he said, and it had become, a financial success for him. But he said at the same time, his personal life with his wife dying of cancer was in chaos, and he's just like, you know, I need to get off the merry-go-round, and he offered the gym to Ken Waller, and Ken Waller didn't want it at the time. He at the time wasn't right, but Pete had said, Pete Gronkowski had just thought, you know what, let me ask, you know, a couple guys, if I can swing it, if we can together swing it.
Yeah.
I found out from Pete, and I never heard this before, that Jim Mannion was supposed to buy it.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yes, that it may have been offered to Jim. And Pete, like you said, you know, Pete's story is amazing because he went from flying out to compete in the 77 AFAB Mr. America, and then, a month later, compete in the AAU Mr. America.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I came out with a one-way plane ticket, you know, I had like $60 in my pocket. He goes, I would eat a bag of day-old hamburgers from McDonald's across the street from the Santa Monica Pier because I could buy a bag of them for a couple bucks. He goes, I would sleep under the Santa Monica Pier during the day like a homeless person, and then I would train overnight at Gold's. I had opted Ken to let me go in with the janitors, and I could train all night under hypnosis.
Oh,
and
wow.
Aside from, number one, that level of just insanity and dedication to be the guy that 2 years later ends up buying it,
jeez,
and then 20 years later sells it to a holding company for what they sold it for, is just a, you know, an amazing story.
Right.
I mean,
what was what was the number they sold it for, Mark? Do you know?
You know, God, I can't say for sure, John, but I think when Gronkowski, Connors, and Kimber sold to Brockway Moran Holdings in 1999, I want to say it was $100 million.
Hmm.
And of course, I'm sure there's lawyers and business managers that get chunks of that.
Yeah.
But
he
did very, very well.
Yeah.
You know, coming from, you know, a guy sleeping under the pier.
Yeah, right. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. You can't make it up.
I know.
Make it up.
And you hear all these kind of stories like that in the bodybuilding world where these guys come out here with a dream, and a lot of them, of course, don't make it, but they just come out here with the hope and the desire, and then some of them really make it and some of them don't. It's like the old Hollywood story, I guess, you know?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No doubt about it.
So when it's all completed, Mark, how are you going to release it? Are you going to release it on Netflix, or how are you going to do it?
Yeah, I think whatever distribution deal works best for us, if we can get it, you know, I think, you know, old school film festival, even if you just get a distribution deal, whether it's Hulu or Netflix or Amazon,
yeah,
or whoever, I think that's probably our best bet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then that's something that I think when the time comes, get together with some legal people and find out, because, you know, you definitely, you don't want to do the right thing. You don't want to get taken. You know,
yeah.
Put a,
yeah.
You know, well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's cool that Netflix exists now, though, you know, and all these other streaming companies. So, I mean, it seems like they're always looking for new and new material. I just saw something on Netflix the other day about Eugene Sandow, and they were interviewing Terry Todd and Jan Todd, you know, so that was like, the history of Eugene Sandow. I think they had Louis Cyr in there too. So it was a series of old-time strongmen. So it seems like they're looking for new material all the time from a lot of different sources.
Yeah,
a lot of different topics, I should say. You know.
Yeah, it helps everything. It helps normal television because people can create really, really great series. They can't be done on network TV. They get done on Netflix. And then, of course, you know, a lot of documentaries. You know, I mean, when you go to your Netflix page, you just see all documentaries.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get lost in the shuffle. You hope you do some sort of marketing that can kind of, like, you know, make it stand out a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Especially after all the work you put into it, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
All the time. Did you see the movie Bigger about the Joe Weider story? Did you see that last year?
Yeah, I did. I did. And
what'd you think of that?
You know, in a high production value. I was rooting for it. I think, and you know, I know how hard it is to get a movie made. So
yeah,
you know, I could Monday Morning Quarterback. You know those guys and what I thought you know. If they probably would have made the Bob Hoffman character a little more human and made the Weider character a little bit more human, I think it would have had a bit more of a drama, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I thought the production value was good. I don't know what the marketing campaign was in different cities or not, you know, because I know they had to pull pretty quick.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, just the fact that they got it made at all in a Hollywood type of environment, a Hollywood movie, that was an achievement because there really hasn't been any movies about bodybuilding, in, especially in a big Hollywood production like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they had legitimate actors, screenwriters, you know, directors all from the Hollywood world, so it wasn't a cheaply made project, so just the fact that they were able to put it all together and get it made, that was an achievement.
Yeah, good for Dan, and... Mm-hmm. you know, everyone else involved. I know. I wish I would have done better, but anyway.
Yeah. All right, Mark. Well, thanks for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and congratulations on doing such a great achievement to spread the history of bodybuilding. And we'll stay in touch with you and hopefully get more information about it as it progresses this year. And we'll definitely try to promote it some more when it comes out. So good luck with the rest of your project, and congratulations on all the work you did.
Well, thanks, John, and I appreciate it, and I'll definitely keep you in the loop.
All right. All right, Mark. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Mark Martinez for that great interview. I can't wait to see that movie when he finally gets it out. Hopefully it'll be sometime this year. I want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And next week we will be joined by Doug Brignoli. Doug was one of the top bodybuilders in the 1980s. He competed very successfully in the Mr. America many times. He won his class several times. And he also trained with the great Bill Pearl. Bill was one of his coaches as Doug was competing. So I'm sure he's got a lot of great stories. So we will have Doug on the show next week. So until then, enjoy the Arnold Classic this weekend if you're going or if you're going to watch it. And I will be back from Colorado next week. All right, everybody, have a great week. And we'll see you then. Take care.